Welcome to the Choose to Be podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Where healing begins with you, and we're here to support you along the way.
Welcome to the Choose to Be podcast. Thank you, everyone, for joining our conversation today. We're excited to have Luke Gordon join us again for another powerful, important conversation I'm excited to have. I think it's going to be one that we feel pretty passionate about. Let me just give, if it's okay, Luke, a little backstory on why we're recording, because I, and Alon, I know you have this with clients as well, but I had a client in particular. I was like, okay, Luke, I just want your brain on this. I've heard this over and over. Was the night before they were watching a movie and she was being activated because there was some scenes in the movie about the actress and she felt this sense of something feels off. He's on his phone. Maybe he's looking up the actress. I know that that's something that he would do before I found out everything about his addiction. So is that happening right now? She was having a trauma response. She was having something happen in her body. Yet she didn't feel safe to be vulnerable and ask in that moment, but she did ask the next day. The response was, I don't remember. I have ADD, so you can't ask me those questions. And the part, there's a couple parts to that that make, I think, Alana and my skin crawl. But the part that I have heard over and over was this, because I have ADD, it's being weaponized and used as an excuse to either not give their partner information or why they're acting out, why they're abusive. My gut, my intuition, what I know about it didn't add up. And I'm like, that, I just want to call bullshit on that. But I also was like, well, let me just check. I would like to know what Luke thinks about this and what Luke, when you work with men and you deal with a lot of this type of diagnoses. So that's why we had him come on. When someone is diagnosed with ADD, do they forget that they've acted out?
Yeah, I don't remember my exact response when I reached out to you, but I remember, at least I can imagine me feeling like, what? Seriously? This lady, to your point, she didn't have, in the moment, it didn't make sense for her to reach out. So she reached the next day on invulnerability. And I get it. It's like, oh, I just don't remember. I can't remember because I have this condition, right? Hold on. ADD, ADHD, that is not how it works. That is not the experience at all. I'll draw me to just a little bit from my experience with ADHD because I have it. If you put my brain underneath stand and underneath imaging equipment, my brain lights up with lots of ADHD and I can remember things. I can remember things just fine. I'm not saying I don't compartmentalize. That's not an ADHD thing. ADHD is completely different than that. So it's just scary for a spouse that any spouse that takes any information and weaponizes it. So I'm not saying this man can hide underneath that rock and compartmentalize a little bit more and use some things that he learned to deflect any discomfort that he's feeling in his wife asking him a question. I don't know if it's just like, I don't want to put in the energy to remember or whatever it might be. I don't know,
or they're hiding the reality again. And I think that's what really stood out to me is, well, a couple things, right? But first of all, yes, anytime we use something that we have that we struggle with, whether it's a neurological disorder, whatever that is, to, first of all, use that to invalidate our partner's experience. I think that right there is a huge red flag. Because what's happened is that her experience has already been impacted. I'm going to use Hope Ray's terminology, betrayal violence, where her reality was painted a certain way by her spouse. She had a reality collapse. She's still trying to figure out what is real and what isn't. And here she is having a trauma response, a trigger, and trying to assess, am I making this up? Or is my body really telling me that he's doing the same thing again? And then when she asks her partner to be real and show her the reality, again, we get painted this picture of something that isn't real. And I just think it's effed up, first of all. But the fact that her experience is once again not being validated and she's left in confusion of what reality is so detrimental. So detrimental. And it makes sense why we have clients betray partners show up that are like, I don't know. Is it? Could it be? I don't know.
Well, and maybe this is what we will want to talk about. Maybe not. I'll pull this part of it in just for person that's been betrayed. What's happening inside the brain of could be happening inside the brain often is this work that needs to be put into identifying reality. And often when a spouse asks, okay, what happened last night or what happened last time? If you are in an addicted mindset, you push that stuff down. You have packed that down. You have shut it down. I don't want to pretend like that happened. So if you're going to attempt to share truth, there is going to be a lot of work in that. If you're also in your journey of recovery and you do want to be honest and open, it's not like it's just going to come like this either. There is an experience, even if you're making efforts to put significant energy into, hold on, let me recall, let me spend some time with this, let me get a little bit of time. I learned this tool from my therapist where he says, tie your shoes. And I'm like, what do you mean tie your shoes? He's like, yeah, tie your shoes with your left hand. And I'm like, well, why? And I don't know how to tie my shoes with my left hand. So it takes a significant amount of time. That's the amount of time it takes for me to really get into a place where I can recall and seek to get in the right mind space to give her what she is looking for or Alana what she's trying to find out. It's a lot of effort and a lot of energy. So I just don't want to be confused. Like, you should be able to really quickly just give you that piece for whatever it's worth.
That makes sense. And I appreciate you bringing that piece into it. I remember a long time ago, we did an episode on trust. You were talking about how at one point you guys had a boundary where you had, I think it was like 15 minutes. If you lie, you got about 15 minutes to come back and say, okay, hold on, this is actually the truth. And that's what I'm hearing in that is that we can give some grace for the addict brain who's trying to heal and recover, that compartmentalizes, that wants to shut down, that goes into shame, all those things, or defensiveness, be like, okay, I noticed that I'm going into this place, but really I want to show up authentic. I want to be there. I want to heal this relationship. I don't want to be this way. And then we can step into that space of being vulnerable, even if it means having to come back and say, okay, hold on, that actually wasn't true. That, and I'm glad you brought that up, that is recovery. That is, I think, part of practicing to be secure, because secure isn't perfect, but it's repairing when you realize that you need to repair and doing it as quickly as you can. That's not what I'm seeing happen at all in these examples and these experiences that my partners are going through. It's they're being left in further confusion and now believing that because they have ADD or what other diagnosis that they've been given since their addiction came to light is the reason why my partners now can't have the truth and are left in the crazy making, that are left in their impact not being validated. And I think that more than anything today, my reason behind the episode is to call it out, mainly for partners to hear, but for those who are struggling in the addiction who are using this as an excuse to call it out. My face is getting heated. I feel a lot of passion behind this right now, an emotion. Yeah, it's coming. And I think maybe that's because, well, I know it is. Not only my experience, but when you think about the impact that the betrayal violence already had on these women, and now we're doing it again intentionally, I just having some feelings.
I think your protector parts are beautiful. I think it's beautiful how much you care about your clients. And I think of all topics there, this one can get really challenging. Because when I have somebody sitting in front of me who has acted outside of their values and they do have a diagnosable condition, they do have ADHD, they do have bipolar, they do have depression, they do have anxiety, fill in whatever condition there is. As a professional, I still have to treat that. And that does not give anyone an excuse for behavior. So there's a big difference between an excuse and an explanation. And I know we've said this on the podcast before, but if this is one of the first ones you're listening to, this is really important, because I see a lot of my betrayed partners even struggle with this concept. they will excuse the behavior, or any type of professional explaining the behavior, it may feel threatening and it may feel like an excuse. And so an explanation is just simple facts of this is what we're dealing with. This is part of reality with this condition. An excuse then becomes, we say other behaviors are okay or justified or should just be expected because I have this condition. And there, it's really important to note that no matter what your diagnosis is, it is still your responsibility to not harm people. And it is your responsibility to do the work to be able to manage whatever condition you have. There's a book by Terry Real. What is the intimacy one, Luke?
Fierce Intimacy.
Yeah. By Terry Real. And in there, he talks about a man who has depression and how much he is impacting everyone around him, but he refuses to get treatment. And Terry doesn't beat around the bush. So he basically is like, it's not okay. This guy needs to go get help. And the fact that he isn't, and he is willing to choose to hurt people around him by not getting help, is very problematic. So I just validate, Amy, this protector part of you with your clients of saying, we're not going to use this as an excuse. I think it's really important, if we can, talk a little bit just about what actually is ADHD to educate, because the amount of people who have addictive personalities or addictive patterns or compulsivity even, the amount of them who have ADHD is an incredibly high correlation. And so this is really common in the field that we work with. Really common. More often than not, I will see ADHD. And I assess everybody who comes through, who works with me. I actually do partners and the person who's acted out of their values, because ADHD is often misdiagnosed in women and given other titles, but or diagnoses. But I see it more often than not. I'm surprised actually when I don't see it if they have an addiction. So I think it's really important that we highlight and recognize what it is, because there are some complexities of it that we do have to be aware of as partners. And sometimes we get this idea of what recovered looks like, and recovered doesn't necessarily give them a new brain. So ADHD, that type of diagnosis, means that you have a neurodivergent brain. Or if you're on the autism spectrum disorder, those, no matter how much work we do, you can still have progress and you can learn how to connect with your partner and you can learn how to not hurt people, but we don't get a brain transplant. We still have a condition that we do have to be aware of and we have to navigate. So I think slowing this down into what it is, what actually are the symptoms, what are things that we cannot excuse, might be really helpful for our listeners.
Absolutely. And that was my hope, that we would slow that down.
So, Luke, do you mind telling us, for you, how did you learn you had ADHD? Was it something that was just missed in childhood? Will you tell us just your ADHD story?
Yeah, I'd give you the really simple version. I just recognized that everybody around was saying I was low and I couldn't connect. It wasn't that long ago, my daughter was like, I'm talking to you, but you're just staring at me. You're not even acknowledging me. And it's not because I don't value that relationship. It's not like she doesn't matter to me. And how many times has a lot of you said, like, you're not present, you're not here. And I just feel aloof and spacey and all of those things. And learning about other things, that was a big one. ADHD was just hyper aware of other people and their emotions, super sensitive to rejection, and just started to learn about all these different pieces. And then I had this, I don't know, for whatever reason it was, just like, I was in so much denial around, I don't want to admit I have some other problem. I don't want to say I'm ADHD, and what do I do, get medicated for that? And how do I feel about medication? And just, it was, for me, whatever reason was. And then finally just the pain got really bad and needed to dig into it to another level. So it was a lot of little things that led to it. And then somebody told me also, like, hey, just so you know, ADHD, that's your superpower. That makes you really cool. And I'm like, wait, what? I'll listen to that, right? Don't tell me about problems. Tell me I'm cool. And then there's my ego, right? What do you mean? Well, think about everything you can accomplish in your life because you're ADHD. You're fast paced. You're moving. You want to get stuff done. Okay, all right. Let me look, explore this a little bit more. And then I did. And then I turned the way that I perceived ADHD into a superpower. It's really good. It's really important, but it's really destructive if I don't manage it, treat it. So then got with some really, really, really good doctors that's taught me a lot about it, educated me on it. Now I'm attempting to manage it and use it as a strength and not for my downfall. Anyway, those are some things.
I really like that. And I'll just say, switching gears, as someone who's lived with you, he would stop at green lights and I'd be like, the light's green. Oh, yeah. Or a four-way stop, he would just go, not even slow down to pay attention to the other cars. I'm like, what are you doing? I could keep giving these different examples, but some of the other ways that ADHD shows up is, like you said, Luke, there's a sensitivity often to rejection. They actually call it sensitivity rejection disorder. There is a not ability to be able to focus many times, or struggling to focus. But then when something really interests you, it's a hyper-focus that you could spend hours hyper-focused. Impulsivity is another thing that comes often with ADHD. And I think with ADHD that gets really confusing is ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is the full name of it and the name in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM, is that hyperactivity doesn't present itself physically in many cases. So we have this idea in our head of what it looks like for somebody to be ADHD. We picture a little kid who can't stay in their seat. Side note, the assessment that they still use today will ask that question of, like,
that's crazy. Stay in their seat.
And it's an awful one.
It is.
Because there's a lot of people, their environment or their upbringing, the way their parents raised them, never allowed them to put that energy outward. So it gets internalized. And we see this especially in women. But I actually see this in more of my softer men. And so my son, who's 19, is off the charts ADHD. And he'd be totally fine with me saying that. But he would never get out of his seat. He would die inside before he would get out of his seat. But his leg would be bouncing, or he would be in la la land inside of his head. But he wasn't the kid who kept getting up and down, because he had been very trained to stay in line. And so when we use that term hyperactive, that can throw a lot of people off, because they're like, no, I'm not hyperactive. I never was. But that chaos happens inside of the mind, and it happens internally. I remember, Luke, you used to always talk about the committee in your head. You're like, I have so many voices going at once with all these different thoughts and ideas. And sometimes that committee could be really negative. Sometimes it could be positive. Sometimes it could be both. But that noise and the chaos in the head and not being able to slow down and really focus, unless it was something with really high stimulation.
Oh, I remember. Remember one of the catalysts that got me into really looking into it is I really wanted to continue my education and I just couldn't. It's like I couldn't process material the way that I needed to further my education. So I'm like, I want the education. So how come? What's going on?
Well, and the reason I say this, Amy, is specifically for your client and other clients like him, is nowhere in there did I say that there is a memory loss. It's not Alzheimer's, right? You don't all of a sudden just forget the past minutes ago or days ago. That's not part of ADHD. While there may be confusion, somebody who has ADHD absolutely can sit down and figure out the details and share what their experience is. Now, do addicts, on the other hand, often take information and purposely try to push it out of their own mind so they don't have to think about it or deal with it? That is the common. And sometimes that information is retrievable and sometimes it's not. But if we're talking in the last few days, weeks, or months and years, I'm not going to give you a free pass.
Right,
Luke?
Yeah. I'm picturing men listening to this and I'm going, you're not trying to hurt your partner, because what you're trying to do is you've created a pathway inside your brain to make sense of your experience. So you said ADHD makes sense of my experience, why I can't remember, and it's hurting your partner. So you've used it to make sense of your reality, even though it's not, and now you're hurting your partner.
Can you talk about, Luke, when you get a new diagnosis where all of a sudden they're going through recovery and a doctor says, hey, you have ADHD, hey, you have bipolar, you have anxiety and depression, which, side note, when you have been messing with those dopamine receptors for so long and screwing them up, depression will be a natural outcome of that. Doesn't mean it's not treatable. But when you get that, what does a typical addict brain do with that information?
So you're saying somebody that's in addiction and they get information like, hey, you have ADHD, what do they do with that? I think about the man that got diagnosed with autism, but it was like he, what's the word? When you masked autism, when they're really good at masking, he got that diagnosis and it's tears. Like tears, like, finally, this makes sense for me. But he responded completely different than your previous partner did. He's like, okay, how do I create a life around this that's good for me and my family, right? He went to work. He went to understand how to treat that. So I guess for me, when I got to a place with my ADHD, I had a profound sense of, well, I asked the doctor, we're on the screen, he's showing the pictures of my brain. And Alana was in the room at the time. Maybe you don't know about this, Alana. And I just asked him, I said, I feel really emotional right now looking at my brain because it's all red and other colors. And you're saying the normal brain isn't red. And I'm not sad, but I feel a lot of emotion. Is it weird for me to be emotional right now? He's like, no, because you have clarity and it's making a lot of sense. And then when I think about that, I'm still in my journey with my ADHD and all this, okay? Was I'm like, okay, what do I do? Tell me, what do I do? Like, so you gotta eat this, you gotta exercise like this, you gotta do hyperbaric oxygen chamber like this, you gotta do this so you could be engaged in your life. If you want to connect your people, you're going to have to work extra hard. So for me, there was that sense of awareness and relief. And I'm not saying I'm a perfect person, I'm showing up in all the perfect ways. That's for damn sure. But I want to do something with that information. And it was really empowering to get that information. And what we're not talking about, the man I started off the call with, is he's just sitting there going, like, hey, what do you want me to do about it? Right. And I'm like, lack of a better word, I'm like, dude, step up. You're just putting her through pain, living on this. And part of me goes, let's forgive me if you're a partner and this is triggering, but I'm like, let's take your spouse outside of this. What are you doing? Do you want to be connected to this woman? Do you want to be connected in general? Or are you just going to settle with just not being able to remember stuff?
Some people take their information and it becomes the whole puzzle. It becomes everything. Other people who I believe are tackling this in a healthier way go, okay, this is a piece of the puzzle. It's an important piece of the puzzle. But like for you, Luke, your doctor gave you all of these other important pieces just physically. He said, hey, you really need to do nutrition and exercise, and here's some vitamins to take. He gave you those type of things. But then I also know you're working on some of your family of origin stuff. And you're working on recognizing how you've been a Mr. Nice Guy or a validation junkie, or you're working on your self barriers / boundaries, or there's the relational work that needs to be done. And then there's still that individual work with working in your individual therapy. So now you can see how this is a piece of the puzzle, and having this information absolutely gives more understanding to the whole puzzle. But we can take that piece in or out, and still we have all of these other pieces that have to be placed.
And here's my journey. I am angry that the way my brain is at parts that I am so damn sensitive to rejection. I am angry about that. And I don't know how much of that will be healed, but I have to be aware of it. And I have to be working to manage that piece. And that's a piece of ADHD of parts that I can, part of me can be rewired, new neural pathways created. But then some of it, I just have to be aware of how I function.
But can you slow that down and explain why that's so important for you to, even if you can't fix it, if there is actual, you're neurodivergent and this is how your brain is, why it's still so important for you to do work around it and have awareness around it?
Isn't so destructive if I'm not aware of it. So destructive because I'm so hypersensitive and hyper aware of other people that it just gets in the way of that connection because ultimately it's how I feel about myself. So I just have to create awareness in my life and use tools maybe at a different level. Somebody that's not neurodiverse in love, you know. So I think the emotion comes up for me, like the I'm so angry about it. Just I'm still on my journey of understanding the impact that it causes other people and just becoming aware and trying to treat it.
Well, I think that's what's showing up, sorry, for me, or what I want to highlight is this piece that you're saying, both of you are talking about, is that self-awareness and recognizing, okay, this is another piece of information. This is another piece of information where all of us are puzzles. And I think we have our entire life to pull different pieces of the puzzle to our human experience. And that's very normal and beautiful. But if we're not aware, and like what you said, Luke, there, like I've got to see this in myself and recognize it and then continue to practice the healthy behaviors around it. What I'm noticing over and over and too often with our clients is that that piece isn't, it's like it was recognized. Here's a piece. And they're like, oh, thank you. That's great information. Now I don't have to do anything else. And then it just gets chucked back at their partner over and over. But see, I'm ADD. Let me throw it in your face again. See, I'm bipolar. Let me throw it in your face again. And that's the part that I want our partners to be aware of is happening, because it isn't about the diagnosis. It isn't about the things that we have, the neurodivergence. We all have these things about us that are impacting the way that we show up in our life and with partners. I hope I'm not coming across as like, this is wrong, right? You shouldn't have this. It's how you're using this information. And if we're not feeling, like if you're sitting across from your partner and there is no connection happening and she's obviously injured again, and there's no sensitivity, there's no empathy, and you walk away with like, sorry, I'm ADD. That is problematic. I want my partners to hear us all say, this is problematic. This is not someone who is trying and attempting to repair. This is still someone that's trying to either stay in their addiction and stay hidden, or just doesn't want to do the work. Just doesn't want to do the work. And it's so painful. This is why doing podcasts, I think sometimes it's a little easier for us to get our message across and this information, because in our sessions, we are sensitive. We are throwing this kind of information out. So I want to acknowledge that this can be hard to hear. And I value the platform that we have to be able to say these hard things, because you can turn us off if you're not ready to hear it. You don't have to listen. But this is something that I feel like it was important enough to me, at least, to say, hey, I'd love to throw this out as an episode, because I do see it way too often happening. And to addicts, the ones that have injured their partners, I hope that you will use this as your wake-up call. Use this as a piece of awareness to be like, okay, I do need to do something with this and stop weaponizing it.
I want to give a real life example that happened last night. We were playing a game as a family. We had finished dinner and we're sitting around the dinner table, and there's this game where you do 3, 2, 1 point, and you point at somebody. And if you match the person whose turn it is, you get a point. And we're playing the game and we're going along, and Luke has like 10 points, you win the game. He has like 8 points. And I'm watching. And all of a sudden it dawns on me that he would wait until the child pointed and then he would point with them. Except everybody at the table was doing it because my kids are young and then I have a special needs daughter. So they were all doing it. So I have like 2 points and everybody else has like 7, 8, 9. And I'm like, you all suck. You guys are cheaters. But I told Luke, I'm like, you are such a cheater. And so as we went around the next few times, I kept watching him and I was like, you're cheating. And so I kept calling him a cheater during the game and it was playful and it was funny. Or I thought it was playful and funny. It was. We were all laughing. But he told me the next day when we were on our walk this morning, he said, yeah, I'm really proud of myself. He said, that really hurt when you kept calling me a cheater in the game. And he said, but then actually I was able to work through it and then just have fun and enjoy the game. For me, that didn't even register that that would bother him. And it makes sense based off of his past history and everything that we've gone through or go through that that would be more sensitive to him. But it didn't even cross my mind. But right there, you see how he owned it. He could have easily taken that as an excuse and said, how dare you? Why did you have to keep doing that in front of our kids? You didn't need to make me feel that way. I have rejection sensitivity, right? He could have easily used all of that as an excuse. But instead, he went to this place of vulnerability and he went, yeah, that was actually hard. And then he did his own work around it. So he didn't come to me and said, that was hard. Now you need to make me feel better. He said, I'm really proud of myself. Here's the work that I did around it. Now, I'm saying this not as like, hey, here's the gold standard. You need to be like Luke, because I can tell you lots of other areas around his ADHD where he has significantly caused impact and harm to myself, our children, and other people around him. So I don't say that in a way of look at him, he's so great. And I say that this has taken significant work to get to this place, but that's the difference of an excuse versus an explanation.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important to slow that down.
It is such a good example. And in addition to that example, what you're saying there too, I'm picking up from that is he didn't throw that back at you because he was the originator of the injury to begin with, of the action and the behavior to begin with. So even though we can see that your words unintentionally injured him, the original injury was because of his behavior and he owned that piece.
And original behavior in the moment and in the past.
And yes.
Right? Both of those things played into it.
Yes. Yes. And that's the accountability part. So when you hear us talk about this, whether in podcasts or in our sessions, when we're saying, okay, but is there accountability, reliability, that sense of ownership? This is what we're talking about, rather than the blaming, the weaponizing, the throwing it back in your face. That too is part of what I'm seeing along with the excuse of, well, I have ADD or I have bipolar. This is all so complex and there are so many different pieces to this. And whether you are truly diagnosed with this condition, whether it's a co-occurring condition because of an addiction, whatever that is, it's pieces to what's happening, to what you're experiencing. We still have to own it and get curious about it. Like Luke said, be aware of it. And it is not an excuse for abusive behavior or communication. And it is not an excuse to, oops, I forgot that I injured you. That is not an excuse.
No. And so maybe the way we wrap this up is we put out there that there is responsibilities that come with having any type of diagnosis. And the responsibility is to recognize the impact, to own the impact, to see what kind of puzzle piece it is, and to get healing and healing of whichever diagnosis that we're talking about. It's never just a pill, ever. If I have a client come in with a depression, I wish I could remember the statistic of how much medication helps versus lifestyle changes and environmental changes. Maybe I'll look it up before we do the show notes. Probably won't, I'm going to be honest. But go look it up if you're listening to this, because going and getting the medication. I have people who have come to me and they're like, yeah, I have depression. Okay, what are you doing to manage it? I'm on medication. How long have you been on medication? Well, the last 35 years.
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
And you still have depression, mm-hmm. right? So clearly, and they go, well, okay, the medication absolutely helps. It can, and it does, but that in of itself is not an end all be all. So there is responsibility to go get educated, mm-hmm. to learn about it, to do your healing work with this, and explanations, absolutely. But we're not going to use excuses here.
No. Sam Tielemans, I think, talked about this a while ago, a couple of years ago, I remember, around depression, and he had done some research. So I had those numbers. And I think that's where I heard it, is from one of his episodes, again, years ago, that he did around this. And that underneath a lot of these, and this is why I love brain spotting, but underneath a lot of this is trauma, unhealed trauma, chronic pain, illness, disease. It's unhealed trauma and injury from childhood throughout our life. And that's what I'm hearing as you're saying, dig in, get curious, find out more. It has been an incredible, beautiful journey for myself as I have done that, to see what is really underneath my anxiety disorder, and rather than taking a pill, to see what's underneath extremely high cortisol levels. There's so many different things that my functional medicine doctor was like, and this and this and this and this. And ultimately, it's getting to the root of it. It can be really empowering when you start looking at yourself in these different ways and unpacking a lot of it, seeing what your body holds.
That right there, what your body holds. And you're so right. So the DSM is almost 1,000 pages. There's this beautiful quote, and I wish I could remember who said it, but he said, if you could adequately treat trauma and really get a hold of it, this 1,000-page manual would be a little pamphlet. I see that. There's so much just impact that we have living in this world. There is so much trauma. And like you said, as the individuals, and whether it's a neurodivergent brain or it's trauma-based, or it's a neurodivergent brain that has been traumatized because we don't have a world set up for neurodivergence that's supportive of that.
Right.
Whichever way we're looking at it, when we do our work and we get down to those root causes, that's where we can really have healing. And it doesn't magically make us not have these experiences, but then we are able to manage it. And we are able to limit the impact and the damage to others. And that is what we want. So this, for some of you, this might be a really, really sensitive topic. This might have brought up a lot. If you're living in this right now, you yourself or with your partner, I live it, currently live it. ADHD impacts my life every single day. I have multiple people with ADHD in my house, but when it is your significant other, I can't tell you all the ways. There's so many ways that it's impacted me. And if it's been hard for you, please be gentle with yourself. I do recommend getting support from a professional, especially one who understands the complexities when you have comorbid conditions, if you have addiction and another diagnosis. If it's comorbid like that, it is going to be really important to work with a professional who understands both of those, working together with those. So as always, thank you for hanging out with us today, and we look forward to seeing you all next week.
Just in case y'all think we ignored our amazing guest, Luke Gordon, towards the end of our episode today, we did not. He had to hop out and meet with a client, but we really do appreciate him joining our conversation today with the time that he has. We also wanted to make you aware of a new resource that is available now. You can get it today. For those of you who find yourself wondering if you should stay or go, it is such a confusing and challenging and personal decision. Knowing the complexities of this space, myself, I created a self-paced guide where I will walk you through 8 modules, followed along with a workbook that guides you through how to answer this question for yourself. Don't let fear decide your future. This guide will validate and challenge those fears so that you can feel more confident in whatever decision you choose, because it really is about choosing that next right step for you just right now. You can find that guide by going to the show notes or heading over to chooserecoveryservices.com. And as always, continue to choose healing, choose recovery, and of course, choose you. Take care, everybody.